Association of the Libraries, 18 Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Ramabhati, Jaya Dhamma Chari Divine Rishi Bhagavan, King Jai, Rat Granta Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Sri Harinam, Sankirtan, Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gaurataya, Ki Sarvataya, Gaura Vimana, Vimana, Hari Sri Vyasamu Devotees, Hari Sri Vyasamu Devotees, Hari Sri Guru, Sri Guru, Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kinto 1, Chapter 12, Text Number 33, Title Birth of Mahabharata, Birth of Emperor Pariksha.
Nam prahi namah jaru.
Purport. We'll begin to
Shyamena Jana Samakana. Chaksun Lulitam Yena Tatsumai Sri Guru Vainamaha, Sri Chaitanya Manopistam, Snapitam Yena Bhutalai Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadaki Swam Padati Kam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Daita Padadhara Sri Vasari Gola Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. This is the sun god here.
You would like to turn the light?
I just wanted to meet the sun god.
Yes. Could
you
un pochino più che ancora un po' si vede male.
I don't need any light.
Non è
give the light to
the non è
no, I don't even need any light. You see anybody doesn't make a noise. We chant Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivedanta. So it's Krishna is he's called Grahi Bhava Janardana. That means he accepts whatever is our intention, although the expression is not correct. But we should be very careful about the expression. The word is Gadadara, not Gadadar, or Gada, Gada. Gada means Gada, Gada means club, and Da, Dara means holder. So the word Gada, Gadadara, Gadadara, is one who holds the club. If you say Gada, 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 Dara, the word Gada means ass, or one holds the ass. So you have to be careful when you pronounce Gadadhar's name. Please say it correctly. Sometimes when we chant the mantras, we have Gadadhar and whatever else comes out, I don't know. So it's Gadadhar, Gadadhar, Gadadhar. Gada, Gada, Gada means club, and Gada means ass. So be careful. You're calling, you know, Lord Chaitanya's associate, the holder of the ass. But again, Krishna is Bhavi Bhavi Griha Bhavi Janardana, which means he accepts your intention, not your words. But still, the words are important. Also, the word tulasi is, it's not tulasi. We're having tulasis. If you want to drink one lassi, you want to have two lassis. It's tulsi or tulasi. Not tulasi. So be careful when you say it's not tulasi, it's tulasi or tulsi. So there's many words. It's not our fault because we're raised in Western countries, and so we're not used to the big words, which have even a slight difference in emphasis on the syllables, you get a different, totally different meaning. So I don't want to create an paralysis by analysis, but still you should try to get it right. I was is this with Lokanath Maharaj? He's writing a whole book about this. He's concerned. In this one class with Srila Prabhupada, he was having the devotees pronounce the word for word. And then the devotee was pronouncing the words incorrectly, so Prabhupada was going back over and saying, no, it's like this. So, I know it's not our fault, because our Sanskrit language, unless you really learn it carefully, it's easy to make a mistake. But the language is so situated that a slight difference in the emphasis on the syllables, you get a whole different meaning. It's like if you say Hare Hara Namakrishna Yadavari Namaha instead of Hare Haraye Namakrishna, you're chanting the Shiva instead of Krishna. Hare Hara Namakrishna Yadavari Namaha Hara is Shiva. Hare Haraye Namakrishna Yadavari Namaha is Krishna. So. And there are many words. Actually, there's a lot. We make mistakes. So, those of us who chant kirtans should be a little more aware of that, because, you know, I guess in Italy there's not so many Indians, but when the Indians hear it, they think of sometimes what these people don't know what they're chanting. But Krishna is so kind that he is, he's called Grahi Bhava Janardana. That means he doesn't accept within you what is your intention and not so much what your expression is. But still, you should be careful. I'm sure I make a lot of mistakes too, but those who lead kirtans should be great. You know, carefully get the words right. Okay, this is a very, very nice description of one of the great king, who was not only a king, but he was an emperor of the world. And the whole purport by Srila Prabhupada describes his life, some of his activities, his family, some of the sacrifices he performed. And he was very rich. Nowadays, we don't find leadership with such qualities. It's very rare that a leader will have good qualities. It's mostly quite common. A leader is somebody they want to get rid of and put in somebody else who is either worse or maybe a little better, or practically the same as the other person. That's unfortunate in that Kali Yuga. Everyone's disqualified. And people who become leaders, usually because they are motivated by personal ambitions rather than lead for the benefit of others, and they usually take the opportunity to fulfill their selfish desires. And sometimes, at best, they give some good things to the people in general. But generally, we see, somebody told me in Italy there's something like 35, 40 political parties. So, such a diversity of politics, such competition. And usually, everyone wants to get power, but no one's really qualified to be in a position of power. It's unfortunate, because one has to, if he's a leader, whether it's from the political or material point, or the spiritual, transcendental point, one has to be qualified to deliver those they lead on the path of free from the path of birth and death. And so we hear, when we read about such great kings, we marvel at their qualities. So kind and so generous, so magnanimous, and so, selfless, and so qualified with great learning and great influence. achievements also, and that it's overwhelming to hear of such. And we pray that such persons would appear even within our material society, even spiritual societies, to lead, because when you have a good leader, a qualified leader, a leader who leads for the benefit of others, and then so many things are achieved. First of all, the people are happy. And when the people are happy, and then they're inclined to give whatever they can give to support that leader and to follow him. And so from that point of view, so many good things come. Nowadays, it's people, sometimes they make somebody happy, but then they make someone else unhappy. And so it's, they try to do good to the humans, but then they kill the animals. And they try to do good to the animals, and then they, you know, exploit, you know, other classes. So, in today's society, and we see that it's more or less, and the world is polluted by that movement. Prabhupada says, and that, you know, the leaders are chosen from the people, but the people are no better than the leaders. Because the leaders, they come from the same category as the people anyway. So when they mislead, you know, the people become upset. But what? Why should they become upset? Because then, you know, they elect the same people who are like themselves anyway. And sometimes we see that when some leader does something really, what we say, scandalous, or, you know, very devious, some people say, oh, we should forgive him, just slap him on his wrist, and give him a little fine. You know, he's only a human being, so what can we expect? It's like when President Clinton got involved in all that, you know, affairs with women. You know, all that was exposed and became headline newspapers all over the world. The leader, president of the biggest, most powerful nation in the world, is having all these illicit relationships. So after some trials and some hearings, and, you know, they just kind of dismissed it because everyone else is doing the same thing. So how can they punish for someone for what they're doing anyway? You know? So he got caught. But everyone else is not. Maybe some people are not getting caught. But it goes on. So this is Kali Yuga. Mandasumanda matayo mani bhagyu padritaha. In this age, everything goes down. Duration of life goes down. Intelligence goes down. Bodily strength goes down. Memory goes down. One's good fortune also goes down. This is a very, I think it was a bad age. People are lazy spiritually, enthusiastic materially. They like to quarrel. They quarrel over the most smallest things. They're unlucky. They try for one thing and get something different. They're always disturbed. Even if they get what they want, they're never happy. So this is Kali Yuga. This is a very difficult age. And it's only 5,104 years into Kali Yuga. And so you can get ready. It's just the beginning. And so it's destined to become much worse. Actually, if you read the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the description of the age of Kali, it more or less describes the other 999 Kali Yugas that are where Lord Chaitanya comes once in every 1,000 Kali Yugas, or Krishna comes once in every 1,000. So this age we can see that the degradation is already really full blown in many areas of the world. I could tell you some stories that will shock you. You've probably heard some of these stories too. I won't say it because it's not public conversation. I mean, people are literally rakshasas. They kill each other and eat each other. So, and why is it like that already? When we're only 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, when there's another 427,000 years? Because Kali's kind of worried. He's worried. He's worried because Lord Chaitanya is here. And he's trying to do as much as he can, as fast as he can. So he's on high speed. He's got the gas pedal to the floor. And he's trying to get as many souls as he can. Because he knows Lord Chaitanya is coming this age. So the description in the 12th canto really applies to the other 999 Kali Yugas. And there's some description of Kali Yuga in the 11th canto. And that more or less applies to this one. Because Lord Chaitanya has come. And there will be a golden age in this age where the entire world will become God conscious. Or we can even say Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness means God conscious. Lord Chaitanya in every town and village, he's come. And he's able to do it. You know, we've seen the beautiful deity installation in Mayapur. It more or less heralds a step forward in the spreading of the Sankirtan movement around the world. It's an indication that Lord Chaitanya's movement will be moving forward everywhere because his mercy is becoming even stronger now with his appearance in Shigan Mayapur. Because Mayapur is actually the center of the world. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a class in one place called Gainesville, Florida. Now Florida is one really quite important state in America in the sense that, you know, many people go to Florida specifically for health, for vacation, for nice weather, for a lot of sense gratification. So it's a very important state. And of course, America is considered to be one of the greatest nations, maybe the leading nation in the world materially. So Prabhupada was giving a class in Gainesville. He said, here we are in Gainesville, Florida, a very remote corner of the world. So far away from Sri Rama Airport. So Prabhupada was indicating that the center of the world is and that's the center because that's where the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this age and to bring his mercy in the form of this Sankirtan movement, which will engulf the whole world. Of course, he's asking us to join in and take part in this glorious mission, and that's our good fortune to be able to assist Lord Chaitanya in this mission. And the thing about Lord Chaitanya, he's so wonderful that the fact that you assist him, he gives you the credit, although he's doing it all. And he's asking us to simply take part. It's like his mercy, his intelligence, and whatever else is happening is coming from him. But somehow he's saying, just take part and you get all the credit. And then what is, you can not only get the credit, but you also go back home, back to Godhead. So this is a glorious mission, this Sankirtan movement. But Kali is very much entrenched right now throughout the world. And he's established himself very strongly. So we have to somehow or other hold tightly onto the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because they are very merciful. Kali Yuga Pavana Kali Bhoganasana Sri Sati Nandana Nam Ray. Kali Yuga Pavana, he's in the merciful incarnation in this age of Kali. Kali Bhoganasana, he destroys the influence of the age of Kali. Kali Kukuda, Kali is like a dog. chases the dog away. The Dhamma Kali cannot stay anywhere near Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his movement. So we have to dive deeply in this Sankirtan movement. They chant, dance, and engage nicely in devotional service. And try to spread this movement to others. To be a member of ISKCON means to take on, to receive the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to receive that mercy, there's a price. We have to give it also. If you simply receive it and don't give it, generally it's really hard to appreciate it, and generally you lose it. To keep it means to give it. And that's what Lord Chaitanya is asking each and every one of us, to be an instrument for spreading this Harinam Sankirtan movement. How do we do that? Well, there's a variety of ways. But ultimately, it's a determination of the mind and heart, that if we're simply willing to be his instrument, the Lord will empower that devotee to do, to act on his behalf. And we see so many wonderful things are happening by the Lord's mercy, and he's giving his credit to his devotees. So it doesn't mean you have to be, in a renounced order of life, or have some kind of position, or even a lot of qualifications. You simply have to have the desire to become serious. And this is a serious movement. This is not just simply another religious movement in the world where we just simply, offer some prayers and then, chant some mantras and have some nice food and take rest. It's not like that. We're not here simply to pay the bills and to put the food on the table. Many other religious movements have degenerated to that level. And somehow they can simply maintain their buildings and have a few followers and have some processions and a few old ladies come and give some donations. And everyone is happy and they all pat each other on the back and tell each other how nice they are. Like that. No, we're not like that. This is actually a preaching movement. And so there's an effort to be made in that regard to somehow or other reach the conditioned souls of this person. If we try to become comfortable, then we become, we get left behind. I mean, comfortable means that I'm simply interested in getting about my own spiritual life, and it doesn't matter what's happening to everyone else. So we have to be concerned about each other and within our own society, within our own temple, within our own congregation. At the same time, we have to be concerned with those who are less fortunate, those who haven't had the chance to come in contact with this movement and haven't received the mercy. So Lord Chaitanya said, by my command, be guru, save the land. His statement is everyone becomes guru. And he says, well, how to become guru? Whoever you meet, simply tell them about Krishna. Whoever you meet, simply tell them about the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. He says, then you become guru. It's not that you have to have, some position or some, great learning in the shastras. You simply have to tell people about Krishna or try to help people become connected to Krishna consciousness in one form or another. And that may take the form of just, whatever service you're doing. If you're a cook or some cleaner, you do your service in such a way that people will appreciate your service. In other words, they say, oh, this prasadam is so good, this temple is so clean and so nicely decorated, and the devotees are so friendly. And that is preaching. That's also preaching. Preaching is it's not only the words, but wanting to put so much quality in what we do that people will be attracted. I remember preaching in Cincinnati, Ohio. I was running a preaching center, practically alone. There wasn't too many devotees to help me. But I did everything myself. Cooking, the cleaning, sanding of the floors, painting of the walls, taking out the garbage, everything. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. And Prabhupada also says that if you do a variety of activities, it's healthy for spiritual life. Don't think we have to, if you do, this is my service, and that's your service, and this is his service. And variety is good, because it helps you stay happy in Krishna consciousness. So not only do we do one particular service, but it's nice to do a variety of services. So one of the things that I was very keen on is keeping the place as clean as possible. And I would do that every day. I wasn't such a great preacher or a great cook or anything like that, but people would come and say, wow, this place is really clean. So nice. So they would come because it was a clean place. Everyone would tell me that, how clean it was. So, not that I was, any good qualifications, but and my mother taught me to be clean. So I give all the credit to my mother. So in that sense, that's preaching also. So I just use that as an example. Preaching simply means to attract one. And then once people become attracted in various ways, then they can hear the philosophy, they can get a book, and they can engage in kirtans and actually take part. So it's like these beautiful paintings. People see them, they say, oh wow, this is wonderful. And then I see them, and they actually are marvel at such expertise. And they're actually, becoming Krishna conscious just by seeing these paintings. So the artists, they're actually preaching through painting. So there's different ways that you can exhibit that mood of compassion through your service, or more directly by preaching directly to people when they come. But if we're only concerned with our own spiritual life, then we'll find that it becomes very hard to become Krishna conscious. It's such a struggle. It's really such a struggle. Because really, Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. So when he sees that mood of preaching, he takes care of his devotees nicely. We don't have to struggle to take care of ourselves so much. He provides what we lack and carries what we have. Okay, so unfortunately I have a dentist appointment at 11 o'clock and I have to leave here around 9:30. So I'm going to go into 10, so this is a little bit of a shorter class today. But we do have time for questions. I want to have time for questions. Yes.
Volevo chiedere, in merito al fatto che si diceva prima, che tutti i leader di quasi tutte le regioni, tipo gli ebraini con i rabbini, i musulmani con la loro politica, i cattolici con i cardinali, i Dalai Lama si interessano di politica, cioè praticamente il movimento Hare Krishna finora non ha preso nessuna posizione politica. Ora la gente può dire che noi ci interessiamo solo in Dio e non facciamo niente per la società se non prendiamo nessuna posizione politica. Come ci dovremmo comportare nel futuro?
What is the importance?
You took some political position,
yeah. But
the Hare Krishna movement is not taking this. So people are thinking that they are only thinking about brothers, and like socially speaking we are not doing it so much.
Mm-hmm.
How do we say it?
Well, in 1975, I think it was, one of our devotees ran for president of the United States. What was his name again?
Balavanta.
Balavanta.
Also other devotees.
Who were running for other political posts also. He ran for president of the United States.
I think he ran for senator, but he was going to do the president.
Oh. He ran for senator of probably the one state. So Prabhupada was pushing the devotees in the beginning to get involved. But then he changed his mind. He said, he thought it was a good opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness, that if we'd be able to campaign for position, we could use that as an opportunity for preaching. And then he thought it was just a botheration after a while. And he thought better if we could just concentrate on preaching directly. So that idea changed. The thing is, there's nothing wrong with that. It's better if you can get a political candidate and make him a devotee. Somebody who's already in office or somebody who's running for office, try to change his consciousness to become Krishna conscious. And then when he gets in, then he can do something. But it's a lot of effort, generally, to be a lot of money, time, and effort. So Prabhupada thought it would be better and more feasible and practical in preaching if we didn't put so much time and energy in that direction. Yes, he also said it was a very contaminating atmosphere for the devotees. Because, there's a lot of lying and cheating and also going to luncheons where everybody's eating meat and, drinking liquor. So, another reason. You want to run for office? We will support you. Sure, you could be more qualified than whoever else is running. But nowadays, it's really hard. If you get in office, they'll probably shoot you anyway. Because they don't like what you're about to say. Kennedy was killed because he didn't go along with the big, powerful organizations that were behind the political scene, so he was killed. And once you get in office, it's a good chance you'll get assassinated anyway.
La chiave di lettura della storia occidentale ci dimostra, ci fa vedere che c'è stata un'evoluzione umana, cioè si è partiti da uno stato degenerato e si arriva a un'evoluzione che è del giorno d'oggi. Come possiamo confrontarla con la chiave di lettura invece medica che ci dice che da uno stato di evoluzione ci stiamo degenerando?
It's a generated historical idea that we are in the Dark Ages. In Western culture generally we've learned that we are in the Dark Ages of culture and civilized, and gradually we become more and more cultured and advanced and civilized. How can we explain that with what we are going from Vedic culture and actually we're degenerating? It seems like.
Yeah, good question, very good question. The question is, what is the purpose of human life? So, purpose of human life is explained by the scriptures. Human life is meant for self-realization. And if the cultures or the society doesn't support that, then they're accidentally, what we say, depriving a person from their birthright. Their birthright is to have the opportunity for self-realization. And so the living entity is not a material body. The living entity is a spirit soul. So a society should support material needs in relationship to one's goal in life. So one can live happy and prosperous materially, but society must focus their programs around giving people the opportunity to fulfill the goal of life, which is self-realization. And therefore the Vedic culture was geared to that. It's a spiritual culture, it's not a material culture. Now we have materialistic cultures, or not even culture. We have a society that simply is just teaching people that the goal of life is material acquisition, sense gratification, and whatever else comes along with that. So there, that is the degradation, the removal of the actual goal of life and replace it with something different. So that's why Vedic culture was superior, because it had that focus. They had the samskaras also, the 16 samskaras, even before the child appears in the womb, all the way up to the time of death. There are purificatory processes, rites of passage, where the child goes through, the living entity goes through these different stages and performs these ceremonies in both a materialistic way that is ideal, at the same time they become purified towards the goal of life. So where do you have that now? Where do they go to school now? And they learn about things that are not even true. They learn you come from monkeys, like that, and that scientists are really the sadhus of the age, the holy men. We should worship the sadhu, the philosophers and the scientists and the politicians and the academicians and the economists. So these people, they can give something, but they can't give the real thing, and that is direction towards the goal of life. So that's the Vedic culture is superior, because it did, and that was the purpose of Vedic culture. Okay. Anything else? Questions? You can ask questions, we have time.
Yes. On the same point, it was saying that there is a for modern conception of history, we have some improvements from Middle Ages to nowadays, and the point you are making, reading, is surely the most important. But also there is the fact that the Kali Yuga, the time is a very long time. And that when we speak about these ages, we are speaking about very, very long times. And there are also some little cycles, because we are only speaking about 500, 1,000 years. So we can also say that from Middle Ages to nowadays, there is some kind of improvement in the sense that devotees, for example, they can practice their religion here. 1,000 years ago, it could not be possible.
This is your opinion or your question?
Yes, it's both.
Well, it's, there's a different evaluation according to the, you know, perspective you take on, you know, the Renaissance. The Renaissance, they say, was the rebirth of man from the years 1400 and something, 1500, 1600, or the Renaissance, the time of art and music and literature and philosophy. But actually, if you look at it, it was just an increase in sense gratification. Because what they did is they practically took the church out of everything. Before, everything was centered around the church, a religion, and then the Renaissance was a break from that. It was a break from that, and everything became secular. So they call that advancement, or moving forward. So it was just moving forward in darkness. And then from that came the industrial age, or the age of machines. And then from machines came so many kinds of technology. So what we have now is people are killing children in the wombs and calling it, you know, freedom of speech. And people are killing animals indiscriminately and saying that you need protein and meat to live. They're teaching the sciences in the schools and saying that you came from ape. And so it's actually an increase in degradation as far as, you know, in what we say knowledge or what we say culture is concerned. It's a break from religion, and everything has become more secular. And then when things become more secular, they become more degraded. And now you have man-to-man marriages, woman-to-woman marriages, like that. And now it's being publicly displayed as freedom of choice. In America now, you can go to America every June, and there is the gay lesbian parade in New York City. And down the streets of New York City, the biggest city in the world, thousands upon thousands of gays and lesbians march hand in hand, proclaiming that they're free, you know. Yeah, the police go there to distribute for shots. So where's the advancement? And you see, even within the last 50 years, things have gone tremendously down. So you might say there's some freedom of religion. But I can tell you for a fact that this Krishna conscious movement is being monitored by the governments of the world, especially in different countries. And they don't bother us, but if you become too powerful, they will bother you. And that's what happened in America. The CIA and some of the government agencies entered into our organization and tried to stop our preaching and created some problems. And there are many, I have some, you know, information about this. And so one former defective CIA agent who was at the top classification in the CIA told one of our devotees, they were both in jail, he said, "This, you know, your movement's being monitored, and as long as you preach to a few, you know, some college students and a few hippies, it's okay. But if you start getting effective into the middle class, the economic belt of the country, and then they will try to stop you." So you can expect as our movement grows powerful, we will get more and more resistance. And Prabhupada says that. The success of this movement will be shown by how much, you know, demons actually try to stop it. But then he also said that this movement cannot be stopped externally, can only be stopped internally. So Prabhupada understood that we would have to fight at one point to maintain this. And that fight, you know, may take different forms. But, you know, the demons are not going to sit back and let, you know, Lord Chaitanya just take over the world. They're going to try and stop it. if we had become to God, we're not so powerful, at least in one sense. But Lord Satan is more intelligent than the demons. He's working in different ways, and he's coming from different angles now, not just directly as he used to do, but coming from all levels, through culture, through art, and things like that. So it's the movement's being spread in different ways now. So, yes, there is some freedom, but watch as the success continues how they'll attack in different ways once you become more and more powerful. That's a fact. I'm not just saying this to scare anybody. They're not going to sit back and give up their power that easy. There's some heavy-duty rakshasas in the world. Prabhupada even said that there are seven rakshasas, seven man-eating rakshasas, and they're controlling the world. Man-eating rakshasas, and they're controlling the world. In other words, they're behind the political scenes, and they control the big governments. You don't know their names because they don't reveal themselves to the public so much. They have their secret organizations. And if they want somebody in power, that person gets in power. If they want somebody out of power, that person doesn't last. Anyway, look at the Bible time. It's full of wars between the demigods and the demons. That's what it is. Indra's always fighting. The Lord Chaitanya is fighting with the weapon of the Sankirtan movement, the weapon of prasada, the weapon of philosophy. So gradually we're spreading our influence in a very nice way. But watch out if you become too powerful, they try to stop you. So you think you have freedom, but only if you're a nice boy. That CIA agent told one of our devotees, he said, we had one of our agent in your New York temple. He was there for 7 years, and he was monitoring your finances for 7 years. He said the Robin George case was instituted or influenced by the CIA or the CIA, FBI, to destroy your mind. You remember that law case that went on for so many years in America, where they sued us for $32 million, and we wound up paying more, something like $2.7 million, something like that. So that we almost lost a bunch of temples. So the movement in America became very powerful at one time, but now it's gone down for different reasons. You can expect resistance as you become more and more successful. Pretty well. So, yes, there's some religious freedom, but it's in theory only. Yes, supposed to be the freest country in the world. In many cities, we go out on Harinam Sankirtan, they stop us. They call the police. I've been arrested a couple of times. So, in Australia, the police were getting arrested all the time. He's got the award for the most arrested person in the entire country. jail. That's incredibly interesting. And then Krishna was born in jail. Mumbai has a kind of a connection. Yeah, look at France. France considers us a dangerous cult. You know, the country of France has us on the books as being a dangerous cult. Wait a minute, before you do this, did I answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, for me, I think that the main problem comes from inside.
Yeah, the problem said that.
But it's not enough. We have to find out what is going on inside. Because we are doing it.
Prabhupada said this movement cannot be stopped by outside forces, only by the insincerity of the devotees. Because Lord Chaitanya's movement is coming directly from the spiritual world. It has the full power and mercy of the Lord. The thing is, as Prabhupada said, he said, we could take over the world in 18 days. He said that to the devotees. But the thing is, you're not ready. You will know what to do with it once you get it. So Lord Chaitanya won't give you the world yet because you don't know what to do with it. So we were not qualified. So what is the qualification? Qualification is purity. Purity is the force. Books are the basis. Purity is the force. Preaching is the essence. Utility is the principle. These are the four, the four weapons that we work with. But ultimately, purity is the force. So as we purify ourselves, we become what we say, transparent for Lord Chaitanya to use us in his movement. So nothing can stop that. No government or military force is able to stop that. Because Krishna has a plan. And Krishna's plan right now is to get the demons to destroy each other. You read that in the ninth canto. Is that he's arranging for the demons to become more powerful, so they just fight amongst each other and kill each other. And then a large quantity of demons are removed from the earth. And then the Sankirtan movement move forward like that. So simultaneously he's empowering devotees, at the same time he's giving the demons opportunities for greater and greater military power, so they just fight each other and kill each other. It's a thorn that takes out the thorn. When the thorn is in the body, you take another thorn, you take that thorn out, and you throw both thorns away. So Krishna is using the demons to get rid of the demons. This is an exciting movement. It's better than any, Bollywood or Hollywood production. And look, if you read the life of Indra Juna Maharaj, he's like right in the forefront of preaching. He goes through the most amazing experiences. Krishna always just somehow or other, shows his glory because he's completely surrendered. And he has amazing results in facing the demons head on. His successes in Poland, there was so much opposition from local governments and so many things. Now in Russia we have tremendous success. You were there in Mayapur.
Yes, because I had what he said about that was really interesting what he said that the first time that he went there and he met the devotees underground, the best Kirtan was there by saying anything.
They would chant Kirtan without chanting.
He couldn't chant.
So, what I was referring to is now we got a place in the heart of Moscow, where we can build a grand temple. Where, 10 years ago, our movement was practically outlawed. So, and at the chagrin of, you know, many religious and political leaders in Moscow are against all the things, but somehow or other, Lord Chaitanya is pushing it through. We're going to build a new grand temple right in the heart of Moscow. It's an exciting movement. You see how Lord Chaitanya is using his devotees. The more we surrender, the more he uses you. He can't use you if you're not surrendered. We have to be surrendered. As much as we're surrendered, that's as much as he uses you. But he's encouraging us to take up more and more responsibility and preach, spread this movement.
To become on this platform, we have to trust each other. We have to reach that position.
Yeah. Prabhupada said that. You will show your love for me, how much you cooperate with each other to push on this movement. So love and trust is the basic principles of the relationship between the devotees. There must be trust, but there also must be great affection. We have to care about each other. If we don't care about each other, you know, how can we care about the non-devotees? We're out there trying to make new people devotees, but we're neglecting the people that are right next to us. So that's important. And that trust has to be first in the family, and then it extends itself outward to others. Yeah. The internal success of our movement is explained by that one statement by Prabhupada. And the external success of our movement is explained by another statement by Prabhupada, where he said that when the judges of the world will be wearing tilak on their foreheads, then you'll know that this movement will be success. The judges of the courts. Or the court judges. So we're seeing, even in some areas of the world, some influential people are showing some support for our movements. So we want that to increase. But we have to take care of the family first. Simultaneously, but never neglect the devotees. And as Prabhupada said, Prabhupada hasn't been wrong yet. He said, this movement will save the world in its darkest hour. And the world is getting pretty dark now. You know, any time a major war could start. Any time. It's like a pile of, you know, dry bamboo. A little wind comes along and the bamboo rubs against each other and there's a fire. You know, governments, the militaries are posed on each other. They got their missiles and they got their arsenals. And in some cases, they're just eager for war because their countries are so bad off anyway that war is something that will help their country. So people are eager for war. Some people are really eager for war. So it can happen anytime. We see little sparks happening here and there and here and there. And there's some places there are major wars going on regularly, some parts of the world. But it's not like World War III can't all of a sudden come.
So we don't have to think that Kalki will be the solution.
What will? Kalki? Oh, Kalki. Kalki, he'll come.
He'll come.
After Lord Chaitanya's movement spreads everywhere for 10,000 years. And then again, everything goes down again. Harinam Sankirtan, that is the astra, that is the weapon for spreading Krishna consciousness. Okay, so I guess any other questions? Okay, we can stop here. So tonight again we'll have our class, last session on Upadeshamrita, the six things that repeat this emotional service. So that starts at 6:30. Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Nityananda Prabhu Ki
Jai,
Om Bhimanandi
Jai.